so much of the design evolves when you actually start to build, and then you can be like, actually, that doesn't look how I thought it would, or maybe this would look better, or, you know, it definitely evolves through the building process. So I never want to hand that over to someone else.
That's the voice of Susie McAfee, owner of Monarch Woodworks. And I'm excited to talk with her right after a quick word from our sponsors.
Introducing Astra HP, the newest high-performance innovation in cutting-edge technology from Bits and Bits. Let me tell you what's new about it. It's incredibly thin, measuring at just 0.3 microns. It's also tougher than ever with an impressive 5,000 Vickers hardness, and it's specially designed to reduce friction and heat buildup, leading to cleaner cuts and longer tool life. Available now on all their newest spiral CNC bits and router bits. So if you want to check it out yourself, go to bitsbits.com. That's BITS, BITS.com.
Hello and welcome to Building a Furniture Brand with Ethan Abramson, the show that talks about the business behind the furniture business. On this episode, I sit down with Susie McAfee, owner of Monarch Woodworks. Susie has grown her South African-based furniture company to where it is today, not by taking shortcuts, but by fully immersing herself in the world of furniture, from the building, the design, and the community that surrounds the entire industry. Coming from a childhood with zero experience handling tools to now running a widely successful furniture company, she has literally used her own hands to build her company into what it is today. Follow along as we talk about designing for your clients and yourself, running your business through social media, understanding what to outsource and what to keep to yourself, and much more. So let's start the episode and hear about Susie's story in her own words.
So I studied multimedia design at university. I wanted to do graphic design. I applied for that. I didn't get in and kind of got just put on that course. It was a new one, which was ultimately web design, I guess, at the time. So I ended up doing that, which was much more screen-based than I had sort of hoped, and just fell into a job after university and I suppose went down the corporate route. Was doing design, which I did love, but I always loved using my hands, but never really had the opportunity then. I guess the childhood dream was to be a TV presenter on one of those art shows where you know, Mr. Maker or something we had in, I grew up in Ireland, something like that. So yeah, I did find myself a little bit bored and stuck in front of a computer 9 to 5. But I guess cutting a long story short, I moved to South Africa with my husband and we have got an NPO here, a charity that we run. And I sort of ended up doing that and still the web design on the side. And that was good because I wasn't stuck in front of a machine all the time. Just to give you some background, I'm not from a DIY loving family. My father was a doctor. My mom was a teacher. There was no tools in our house. We had someone come in and install stuff if things needed to go up. And it was not something that I ever was exposed to as a child. But when we bought a home here, I probably, like a lot of people, wanted nice things and couldn't find them or afford them. So I started to go to secondhand shops and I would maybe buy something and then try and zoosh it up. So the first thing I ever bought after doing lots of hand sanding was an orbital sander, and I would start to sand things down and just maybe repaint it and started like that. Then I got myself a set of drills and would take off the legs and take off the doors and maybe try something different and just sort of play around, I guess. I suppose you call it flipping furniture. So that got me into the tools and I was like, oh, you can do, with the right tool for the job, you can actually do some cool stuff pretty quickly. From then, I got some furniture made for our house from a local carpenter. And when he was here, I was kind of watching what he was doing and got chatting to him. And he had said he'd left his job and was going to start doing this on the side. And I offered him, would he want me to do a logo? I did some branding and stuff. And I offered if he would like me to do a logo for him. And in the meantime, I was painting on some furniture that I'd done. I used to paint these comic book characters. So you would do Batman or something and then put it on the door of a cabinet, and he was like, oh, could you do that for me? If I make a cabinet, can you do the artwork on it and maybe we can sell it. So we started this little comic collection and they looked really awesome. They looked really cool. And I was watching as, you know, he was making these cupboards and I kind of thought, it doesn't look that hard. I'm sure I could give it a bash. So I just asked him, we kind of became friends and we made this little range and it got picked up by a local shop here, a sort of interior design shop that was quite high end. And to my surprise, they all sold quite quickly. And I kind of thought, oh, it was such a buzz to see, like drive past and see something you'd been part of making in the window of this beautiful store. So I guess that kind of got me excited. So in the end, I got a little corner of his workshop and he sort of agreed to show me a few basics. And I helped him with his marketing and his branding and sort of got him up and running with an Instagram and things like that, because that was what I was trained to do. I could do that. And then after a while, I thought, I love this. And I looked into doing a woodworking course. So I found a course online. It was down in Cape Town, which is about 5 hours away. And it said, I think it was 6 days or something. And you did beginner, intermediate and advanced all in one week. So they just compress it all into one and kind of give you the overall basics. And I thought, no, I think if I can just go and get a kind of overall knowledge, then, you know, I could give this a bash. I really felt, you know, quite keen on the idea. So off I went back to school for a week at the age of 36 or 37, I think it was, and just like loved learning something new. So that kind of was, I guess, the start of me. And during that time as well, I had decreased the hours of my web design job quite significantly because, you know yourself, you can't, it doesn't just happen. It takes a long time to, you know, you can spend hours and hours and hours and actually accomplish very little in a workshop. So it was not something that I could really squeeze in my spare time anymore. I needed to put a few extra hours in it in the mornings and things. So I just made the decision, okay, I'm going to try and make a few things and see what happens, kind of give myself a little window and see if I can sell something or if there's the possibility that this could turn into something, and then rolled from there. So it was quite exciting.
I have to ask you, now that you've done this for a long time, you've built a lot of furniture, you work with your hands and you love doing it. When you think back to the very first time you decided you want to get somebody to make something for your home and you said, oh, it doesn't look that hard what they're doing, I can do it. Now that you know and put all that work in. When you think back, is it that hard?
I'm very positive. My motto is always, how hard can it be? And like, I'm definitely one of those, you're in a restaurant and then I'm feeling under the table. Oh, how is this made? Or is that really this thick? Is it, you know, I like to understand how things are made. I mean, it is hard, but it wasn't that hard to get going, if you know what I mean. It's the math for me that is hard. I wasn't very academic. I always went through the creative side of school as opposed to the academics. So I wish I'd paid a bit more attention in maths class. That for me is hard, working out the amounts and all of that. Yeah.
I love to hear that you said that, because you came to this not as a first, you know, out of college, out of university thing. You weren't doing this when you were younger. You came to it after a lot of people have already found their career path, and you just thought, how hard can it be? I'm just going to jump into it and do it. And now you're doing it and you're loving building it and you build amazing work. And so it's great to hear for people who might be listening who think, I don't know if I can make that jump. I don't know if I can learn how to build furniture and then sell it, to hear somebody like you who had no background in this, and just because you had a desire and a passion to do it, decided to jump in and start doing it.
Yeah, just give it a bash. But I think 100% anybody can give it a try, for sure. Definitely.
I want to get into your business. This is a business forward show, so let's talk about that. And I want to start with something that is, I have to say, a little confusing for me. And we talked a little bit before about this, and you know I'm a little, I had to ask some questions, because you're talking about how you have a graphic design background, how you have a website background, how you a brand background, and how you're helping other companies with the website. But when people hear about a new company, they go to look up a company, and the first thing they do is look up the website. And you don't have a website. You've been so busy building furniture that you had to cut back on the website, and you don't have one for yourself. But like we talked about, you are selling furniture, and you're doing that straight through Instagram and straight through social media. And you've built up enough of a presence there and enough of a brand personality there that you can build things, spec pieces that don't have a store they're going to and don't have a customer in mind. And you can put that up there, and that's your advertising, and you get enough sales off of that to run this business. So I want to dig a little bit deeper into how that's working for you and how you're making that happen.
Listen, Instagram is a mystery to me. I don't know why some posts work. I don't know the secrets, but I just know that it's really worked for me. I started off just making things and then doing little stories of how I was making it, actually asking people questions. What can I do here for stability? What would you do? And like, the woodworking community is amazing. I feel like I've got friends all over the world now who, you know, genuinely help you. Do you know what I mean? Like, only last week I had a video call with someone. I've never met him, but he was just showing me how to use these particular runners I was struggling with. You know, people really have time to help each other, which is amazing. You don't always get that in other areas. So I would then, well, the first thing I did, anytime I made something, I would find my richest friends or the people I knew with beautiful homes. There's some beautiful homes in this town, and say, please, can I just come and take a photo in your house? Because I knew off the bat, I don't want to make 10 cheap pine things a month. You know, I want to make one or two beautiful, you know, high-end things, and rather sell that because it's the same amount of work. It's just a different market. So off the bat, I knew I wanted to make designer things. I don't like nothing with palettes, nothing like that. You know, I wanted to go high-end because I love the design side of it. You know, I want things that look beautiful. So I would always go find either a nice home to put it in, or a shop somewhere with a nice skirting board or a nice wall, or just kind of set the scene, because I'm like, this is who I want to put out. This is the type of home that this piece belongs in. So then, and a nice picture catches people's eyes, I guess. So I would just post those, and then someone would say, oh, did you make this? And I would say, yeah. And then it would just kind of go from there. And I've never posted prices on online. I don't know why. I guess it's, you know, that whole pricing is an awkward thing anyway. But I always find that, you know, people then, it gives them a chance to engage with you because they want to know how much it costs and things like that. So initially, and quite a lot of people who see my work is, oh, another thing I did that I've just remembered is when I started and I had sort of maybe got, say, 20 posts of things that I was happy with, that I liked the look of, I would then go and find interior designers on Instagram, and I would follow them and almost like just give them a little nudge to be like, oh, hey, I'm here sort of thing, and would follow and also look and see, okay, whose work do I really admire? Who's following them? Then I would add them, you know, and start following them as well. And then quite often then they would follow back.
Your work, and I highly recommend if people haven't checked it out already to do that, and obviously not on your website, but on your Instagram, and they can check it out. And it's very stylized. And I say that in a way that it has a certain look to it. Every single piece isn't cookie cutter. It's not going to fit into everyone's home. It's not going to fit into every decor. It's definitely stands out. And I think that that's how you got a lot of people looking at your work, because it looks different. It stands out from the rest.
Sure.
But in the furniture world, that's always a difficult place to be, because you want to make something that's eye-catching, that people like, that the press likes, that
sure
stands out. But then you also have to sell that to people who might not have an eclectic home. They might have very standard things in their home. And
having an accent wall is one thing, but having an entire accent piece that doesn't fit with other people's furniture is sometimes a hard sell. So I want to talk with you how you're balancing that idea of making and designing these beautiful, exciting pieces with knowing that you have to sell furniture to people who might not have such exciting homes.
I know, that's such a good question, actually, because the house that we have is, you know, it's an old house, it's a traditional house, and I find that people are a lot more open to mix and matching their stuff nowadays, you know, as opposed to, well, certainly that is a trend in South Africa. So when I did my brand, so I went to an external company to do my branding, because even though I am trained to do that, when it's your own stuff, sometimes you just want a fresh take on it. And I chatted to the girls there and they really just got me, they got my stuff, and they came up with this term, scafro, which is Scandinavian African retro. And they're like, scafro, that's your style. You're a little bit Scandi, a little bit African, a little bit retro. So I think depending on the piece, there is a flavor that is more one of those than the other. You know, some things are a little bit more pared down, but still, you know, beautiful and stylish, a bit more Scandinavian. And then you've got the more patterned resin, colorful things that's definitely got the more African flavor. So I suppose I try not like have a collection, so to speak, as opposed to just a nod. You know, I have certain pieces that are louder than others, and you know, hopefully there is something for everyone no matter what style your house is.
I want to get into the marketing and branding part of your business, because you have a background in that, and you also said you went to an agency to develop your brand. But since you do have a background in it, let's talk about branding. And if you look through your Instagram, it's very cohesive. It's all coming together. It all has a look to it. And you've manicured that look to make it work for your furniture. But without having a collection, and sometimes doing custom pieces, and sometimes doing pieces that you design, and sometimes doing pieces that clients design.
Sure.
How are you able to keep that cohesive brand strategy going throughout all these different iterations of things that you build?
Yeah, the branding was always very important to me, because, like, make no mistake, there is a lot better woodworkers out there in this town than me, you know, more experienced, me doing it for work, that make amazing things, but nobody sees it. And the design is maybe just not quite there, you know, it's old fashioned, it's not. And so I want it to be modern statement furniture that nobody else is doing, and that you can't buy, you know, you can't buy this in a shop. So one of the things that I recently did was make a backdrop for my workshop, because there's not always a lot of time from when I finish a product to go and take it to a nice house and do a photo shoot or whatever. Because quite often now you're under pressure to get things to an interior designer or something like that. So I've made a backdrop, which is just quite simple. And I sort of poured a bit of Semcrete on the floor so that at least I can, at the very least, get a picture with a sort of consistent lighting, consistent background, which helps, because then there's that sort of common thread coming through. And to be honest, if I do make something that isn't really typically my look, if you know what I mean, or my brand, I just don't post it. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't always go up there. But I do a lot of work with interior designers, and typically those are going into, you know, gorgeous homes. And sometimes then I'll say, please, can I just come and take a few shots for my own marketing? And they're usually more than happy to do that. So that's a massive bonus. If I can go in and it's already staged and looking incredible, then I can just take some pics and use those. So you know, it's hard to get content all the time, so I do try and keep the Monarch side of things a bit more polished and finished, and the end product, because those customers don't maybe want to see the one that fell on the ground or whatever is happening on the other Instagram page where you're trying to figure out how to make it. As far as they know, I'm a pro and know exactly what I'm doing. So
you have actually two accounts. One is your professional one, where you show all the finished pieces, and the other one is more in the shop, more you and things you're doing and experiences and the behind the scenes. And balancing those two is a tricky thing for a lot of furniture makers, because the finished products is what they're selling and how they're making the money, but the behind the scenes is what more people are interested in.
Sure.
And helps you grow a following, and growing a following also comes back and helps you sell pieces, because yes, furniture design plays a big part on it, but let's be honest, on the internet, the more followers and the bigger you look on the internet, the more people are going to pay attention. That's just the way things work now.
Yeah, sure. And people like people. I mean, I found that quite early on, that any posts where I was actually in it just seems to do better, or people respond better if you, and people love a fail. I mean, they do. They want to see. I mean, I love a fail. I love it when, I love your episodes, you know, about when things go bad. I mean, it just makes you feel better, doesn't it? So I, off the bat, was like, I'm not going to pretend that everything is going well here. The only thing is, there's sometimes a crossover of people on both, and then I find that I have to block certain clients because I'm like, no, they cannot see this. So it does get a bit messy trying to manage the both. And I do find sometimes I'm more on the one that's just happening in the workshop. I think, oh gosh, I haven't posted anything on Monarch in a while, so it is a bit of a juggle. But I just try and keep them both going, because I love the woodworking one where, you know, people are interacting and giving suggestions or telling you how you should be doing things. I enjoy the community on that one. So I just thought I'll keep them both going and see how it goes.
People can click through and see the behind the scenes and the front of the house. So they get both those looks, and they can see the polished, and they can also see the sawdust and the glue and all that parts of it.
It's also incredible how different something looks from your workbench to, you know, in a stunning home. It's like night and day. And I think it is nice to show that as well, that people have the vision. And then you get clients being like, oh, I see you're busy with this thing, you know, where's mine? Or so it does get you into trouble a little bit being so exposed about what you're doing on a day to day. But you know, it's lonely as well in the workshop. I like to interact. It's feeding that inner child that wanted to be on TV doing a Mr. Maker program. Sort of my own version now.
I hear you. It does get lonely building in the shop. And even though you do have employees and you are working with people and dealing with designers all day, there is that extra layer of community and international community and woodworking community and designer community that you can get just through your phone. And it makes people feel a lot more connected on days when sometimes they're only talking to the people who they're building with. So I completely hear what you're saying on that. And talking, I guess, about the people you interact with all the time, you outsource some of the processes of your work. And don't get me wrong, you love building, and all the pieces are built by you in-house. And so it's not like you're outsourcing the building.
Yes.
You actually love the building so much that you do the design, then you outsource people gluing up and milling up the pieces. And sometimes you outsource some of the CNC or the metal work, but then you get that all back. And instead of outsourcing the actual building, you take on the building and you do all that, because that's the part that you love. So how are you balancing that I love building with I need to build these faster, and I could conceivably build them faster in a production shop, sending it all out and just doing the designs?
Sure. So when I got my own workshop, I obviously needed to kit it out, and I had my tools that I had been using. I needed to get a table saw and a few other things. I had a planer that, you know, someone had lent me their old one that was in a store. So I had bits and bobs, but I didn't have the cash to set up a full, you know, I want things drum sanded, and, you know, I can't afford a drum sander, nor do I have the space or the expertise on how to use it. So I quite quickly realized there's no point in me spending, you know, 4 hours of a day milling, planing down wood, lugging it myself across the workshop, pushing it through. I can do it for the small pieces that I need. But when you start to make big sideboards, you know, it's a lot. It's a lot of manual heavy work that I was like, it's not really the best use of my time. But I didn't want to lose, because especially when you love the design side of things, so much of the design evolves when you actually start to build. And then you can be like, actually, that doesn't look how I thought it would, or maybe this would look better, or, you know, it definitely evolves through the building process. So I never want to hand that over to someone else, because I think, you know, you might lose that sort of creative part of the building. Obviously, that's with new designs, some things, you know, are what they are, and you just make them, and that's a bit more straightforward. So I outsource my milling and the laminating, so someone will glue up, and then I'll go and fetch the boards. So then I've got them all, and then at that point I do all the measuring and cutting it down to size, and then I do all the joinery. I've got a domino, which is the best tool in my workshop. I love it, and that for me just works brilliantly for all the joining. That I use that most days. Yeah, I do. I still love the assembly. And then I realized that I was spending hours and hours and hours sanding and finishing, and I got someone in to help me with that. But he's actually amazing and very fine detail orientated. Came from a sort of restoring furniture background, so he is brilliant. He, you know, he's quite happy to spend 3 hours fixing a little nick in something, or things that I don't really have the patience for. So it's actually great to have someone who's, you know, good at the stuff that's not your, you know, your strength. So yeah, it's good. We're a good team. Just means then you can push out more, because once you've got the overheads of a workshop and an employee, you need to be doing more than one or two things a month. You know, you need to be moving. So I've got someone who does my CNCing, and then there's a company who do any steel work. So when I do the design and I have, say, a steel leg or parts, then I'll go and take the drawing to them, and they'll fabricate that for me, and then I'll, you know, add that on. So I just realized you actually can't do everything well. So do what you can do well and then outsource the rest. And that is working for me at the moment. So
and there's only so much time in every day, and you are busy. You're busy with building, you're busy with orders, and you're at times too busy with orders, and you need to bring somebody in and you need to outsource. And the day only has so many hours for you to be able to work in. And you can get a little crazy trying to fit everything in there. And this next question is about that, but it's also about being outside of the shop, and it's being able to maintain an actual life with a business going on and a successful business going on, because that is a very, very hard balance and something that a lot of people can't do, and a lot of people burn themselves out on it. And I know that you're coming off, and you can speak to this yourself, but coming off a pretty big personal journey that you just took, where you took some time off to do something to sort of enrich your own life outside of the woodworking world. And I want to talk a little bit about how you're dealing with being a successful furniture company and having to work all the time, seemingly, but also giving yourself some personal breathing time to be able to live your life and not burn yourself out.
Sure, exactly. Well, I made the decision quite early on that I wasn't going to work from my garage, because I did find that, you know, on an evening you're slipping in because you're so excited to finish something, or, you know, something will have dried and you just want to quickly, and nothing ever happens quickly in a workshop. You know, a 10-minute job turns into 2 hours, and then, you know, it's not great. I've got family at home. But it's still a problem now with your phone, because if you're doing so much interacting on social media and your orders are coming through on email or through Instagram, it's very hard to just turn it off and not respond. Do you know what I mean? You have to be quite disciplined to do that. So I do try, and my family will disagree with me. I do try and be quite conscious to just, you know, at the end of, you know, an afternoon, be like, okay, no more work stuff, and then just pick it up again during working hours, even though it, you know, when it's your own business, is 24 hours, isn't it? But I recently climbed Kilimanjaro to raise money for the MPO that we run here. And I was speaking to someone about it today, because I'm fresh off the mountain, and it was like a massive physical challenge. But for me, just that switch off from real life to have, like, I told all my clients, I put it out there that I was going to be off the grid and doing it. And I mean, everyone's still there when I got back. Nothing happened that was drastic. And it was just such an amazing opportunity to just press pause on the busyness of life and just basically do what I was told. You'll wear this tomorrow. We're going to go here. This is what you have to eat. And I have no decisions to make and no demands to be met. I just was there, and it was an amazing thing to do. And I'm so chuffed that I was able to do it and take that time out. And it did give me a good reset, you know, to get back into it now with sort of a fresh perspective.
It's an amazing accomplishment, and my hat's off to you, and very, very impressive. You came to woodworking later, as we've talked about. You didn't grow up doing it. You didn't learn it as a child. It was not a part of your life's vocabulary. But now that you're doing it, you've jumped into it full force, and you've jumped into the building and the business side, and you're doing well at both. You're doing very well at both. For people who are looking to start their own furniture company, or for people who have been doing this for a while and feel like they've hit a plateau and want to shake things up a little bit or do something different to get to that next level of success, what advice could you share with those people based on your experiences throughout your journey?
I would say that I suppose I only know what has worked for me, but I think the brand is important. You know, you have to, especially if your unique selling point is the design side of things, something different, something statement, something that's not run of the mill that, you know, six or seven other guys are doing cheaper, you know, down the street. So I think find your thing that is makes you stand out, and then push into that from a kind of branding and marketing perspective, because that is what is going to make you then stand out. And for me, I mean, social media has been an absolute must. I mean, I haven't even got to the website yet. That's still coming. And just, you know, boosting the odd little advert. If there's something you're particularly proud of or you think, you know, would catch the eye, then just do a little boost. And it doesn't have to be expensive. It's not like I pump lots of money in for the advertising at all. It's really minimal, but I've just found it just really works. Target that audience into your region or close by, and then just hopefully let Instagram do its thing. But I do find a lot of my work is not local. You know, I do it mostly get shipped. So you got to think big, you know, outside of just your hometown. Or I love making things for people locally because you get to see their face when they get it. You get to see it in their house. You know, you get to hand deliver it. So I miss that when you do ship stuff regionally. But usually you get good feedback via, you know, photo or a message when it arrives. It's very nerve-wracking waiting for that. Oh, have they got it? Why haven't they said anything? Is it fine? Is it damaged? It is a bit stressful, for sure. But yeah, you've got to be willing to, you know, package up and sell it, I think, if you want to grow.
Great advice, and expanding your community, not only with the people you know, but also the people who own your furniture all over the world. And thank you so much for sharing that and for sharing all the rest of your story. And I love hearing about it. And I love hearing about the building and the designing and the branding and the mountain climbing. It's all exciting, and it's all a part of your brand, and it's all a part of what's making your business special. So thank you for your time, and wishing you nothing but success moving forward in your business.
Aw, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. If you liked what you heard and you got value out of it, please think about leaving a review and subscribing wherever you listen. To learn more about the series, please visit buildingafurniturebrand.com, and feel free to reach out anytime with questions or guest suggestions to hello@buildingafurniturebrand.com. You can find me at The Build with Ethan on Instagram. Hope you enjoyed the show, and can't wait to bring you the next one.